Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Further from sobriety. So sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from.
And now it's time for Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art, with your hosts David Von Stahn and Leslie M. Scott Jones. And now here's David and Leslie.
Hello. It is Sunday. It is October the 8th, 2017, and this is Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. It's October, but it feels like summer all over again, doesn't it? With my host, as always, the lovely, the loquacious, the lascivious Leslie M. Scott Jones.
Well, thank you, David. How are you this morning?
I'm pissed off.
You're not the only one, babe.
I'm pissed off.
You are not alone.
Like I said.
You're not alone in that. At all.
Like I said, it feels like summer again, not because of the muggy weather, but because of the torchlit rallies that are going down again.
And the students arrested.
In our fair town. Yeah, students arrested.
Nazis
being escorted by police.
Nazis escorted out of
Green
town.
County.
But
would,
students
would you
arrested.
Like some sheets, white
right.
nationalists?
What?
They make to order,
no.
you know.
Did you see the NBC 29 tweet that called them activists?
White activists.
Yeah.
That's funny because I saw a whole bunch of white activists marching,
protecting
and defending the community. I wouldn't consider neo-Nazis and
protecting the
white
people coming out of the synagogue.
Activists.
That's what the white activists were actually doing.
Maybe active in intimidation and fear and hatred and conspiracy to murder.
Right.
But
you know, but
I wouldn't say
potato.
And it's just Charlottesville going at it again, and the police just chilling like
doing nothing.
That cool kid by the locker is just watching all the stuff go down.
Right.
Yeah. Smoke him if you got him, CPD, because we're not doing anything.
Right.
Yes, I just really think it's funny how people come with tiki torches, which is a fire ordinance issue.
Violation,
In Charlottesville as well. They come to basically re-act out a Klan rally.
Yeah.
In the middle of Emancipation Park. Also funny that it's the same week that Jason Kessler was indicted on perjury charges.
With tiki torches, it's either reenacting a Klan rally or it's doing a luau. I'm not quite sure which.
No, actually, a friend of mine said that they all looked like they were auditioning to be on Gilligan's Island. That they were all auditioning to be the professor.
White supremacy on a 3-hour tour.
How about that?
Yeah, I mean, it is a luau. Only the pigs are roasting other individuals. Bang!
Whoa.
But I digress. But I mean, pigs and pigs go hand in hand. I mean, cops and Klan hand in hand.
Yeah.
Shout out to CPD for doing nothing, as usual. That's what y'all do best, really. Al Thomas, top of the pyramid, up top. Yeah, I see you. I see you, homie. Representing the culture very well. No, but this is why we need community defense more than ever.
Yeah.
This is why we need people to show out in these situations. Because, you know, when Klansmen and neo-Nazis get together, it's a gathering.
You're right.
At a park.
You're right.
But when people go to, you know, protest white supremacy going down in a neighborhood, that's an unlawful assembly.
That's a problem.
That's got to go.
Yeah.
Got to disperse, guys.
That's the problem.
Let the Nazis speak their peace. That should be the new town motto. Hashtag send with love and let the Nazis speak their peace.
Yeah. All right.
But
well,
I digress.
We, you know.
But speaking of Emancipation Park, I have a person who draws lovely interpretations of Emancipation Park in her new graphic novel. See how I segue? I come up with a seamless segue?
Wow. That was awesome.
Every time?
Actually.
We get into things.
I think that deserves applause right
stop
there.
It. No,
was,
now you're
that
just.
That was pretty good,
now you're
David.
Just, no, that's
I love
just,
how you did that.
Now you're just being condescending.
No, not at all. I was very proud of you for that.
We have a wonderful graphic novel drawn by Laura Lee Gulledge called Will and Wit, and is being produced into a musical featuring and Melissa Charles is the artistic director of it, and Mia Buckley, she's an actor in it. We got them all in the studio. Say hi, everybody.
Hi,
everybody.
Hello. Yeah, you know what? We also have a birthday today.
What?
It's Melissa's birthday today.
What?
Yes, it is.
Oh, my God.
Yes, it is.
And it was just your birthday.
I know.
Like, not too long ago.
I know.
So,
last week.
So, Libras in the house.
Libras, we're awesome people. Yeah. We are awesome people. Can I just say that?
That's true.
Yeah.
I got no problem with Libras. We
okay,
along.
So... You have problems with other signs?
No, I mean there are just some signs that, you know, just do this, you know.
That is true.
Clash a little.
That is true.
But I mean, that's neither here nor there.
Libras are all about the harmony.
Libras are all about love.
Those Sagittarians, they can just go jump. They can just no. Oh my God.
No.
Oh my God.
So dangerous with the bow and arrows.
It's not Sagittarians. It's Aries for me. Libras and Aries do they do not mix. There's always
and
Virgos too. Like
hey,
I don't understand them.
Hey.
See how I slipped that in there?
Yeah, I see you. You ain't slick. But enough about us. We're talking with Melissa Childs, Nina Buckley, and Laura Lee Gulledge. So talk about it. I know that the book came out first. Laura Lee.
Yeah, the book came out in 2013. I was living in Brooklyn when I drew it, and it was sort of my little love letter to Charlottesville, which was the city that inspired me to go pursue my big dreams in the big city.
That's funny, because I was in Brooklyn during 2013, too, and I am from Charlottesville, so it's like...
You mean y'all didn't see each other? Like...
I know, it's such a small area, right? Brooklyn? It's like people just bump into each other every now and then.
Well...
Yes, it's...
Stranger things have happened.
Yes, this is true. This is true. So you're in Brooklyn. You're drawing this book on Charlottesville. I guess it's a romantic graphic novel, you might say. I mean, it deals with. I mean, I guess it has a theme of romanticism, but I mean, not of the town, but just between the people. But there's also like many multiple themes. It seems like the main character is always carrying. What it seems to be like shadows.
Yeah, I guess I'm a magical realist is my category.
Mm-hmm.
I like to draw a story set here in this reality versus a dystopian future, like a lot of young adult fiction.
And which we'll be getting into soon. So keep it up!
I thought I'd start small with just having what happens in the town when the power goes out. So instead of the world getting destroyed, like, let's just start small. So I think some people think that, you know, they believe in that people will riot and it'll be terrible. But I remember with Hurricane Isabel, I think was the one that inspired this, the one that came through Charlottesville. Everyone just came together. It was like, I think the people are good and that are human nature and maybe it's not all
Have bad. You seen a supermarket in Charlottesville after a heavy rainstorm
or
is
before,
announced?
Right? Oh my God.
Well, it's... stories are wishes. You know? This is my wish.
This is true. This is true.
So it's about art and her love. It's about friendship. There's a little bit of a love triangle in it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it has to do with sort of like healing trauma, and the shadows that follow Will are I don't know, the things she's not dealing with, things from her past. Like, a lot of us are good at denial, so we just work and stay busy. So I wanted to express that part of my personality to help me learn how to deal with the present and how to include other people in my life instead of doing everything by myself, because I feel like a lot of women are strong by being a robot or acting like a boy or just being the other B word. But this story is more about strength through like emotional vulnerability. So, which is, I don't know, was a surprise, which I didn't know until I got to about the end of the story. I was like, well, that's what this story is about. Oh,
but
man.
That's
like,
something that's learned, though. I mean, most people don't start out knowing that you can be very strong and still be emotionally vulnerable. Like, that's something you learn through your lifetime. So awesome.
That's not something
Will
that's
taught
necessarily
that to me,
taught or encouraged.
I was having trouble with that, of how to be strong as a woman without just acting like somebody else and one of these other things. It's like my Bechdel test. Yeah.
Right. Yes. Like, awesome.
So
oh, wow.
When did you think about turning it to a musical?
I was working on the book and doing a partnership with my partner, Lauren Larkin, who is in Oakland at the time. So we both were sort of in really sort of dark periods of our creative life where we're struggling to survive, and we decided to do a collaboration.
Brooklyn will do that.
I know. And so she really helped me sort of, I don't know, like give me a link to reality while I was in the studio working on this book, which is also kind of about death. Yay. And at the end of it, she was inspired by the characters and she started writing down song lyrics. So we decided, hey, let's do a musical like you do.
Like you do.
Yeah, no, we're dreamers. And so we've recruited, through a friend of a friend, found our composer, Cece Vaughn, who is here in Charlottesville. She's a realtor and a mom of two awesome girls. And she poured just so much of her heart and soul into the music. And at first I was scared because, I don't know, some musical theater, it's just all exposition. But she really got the characters. So I was like, oh, okay, I trust you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just let's do it. And actually the musical has taken a different shape than the book, which is surprising and awesome. And it feels like less like it's mine and more that it's turned into its own thing, which
I guess that's what art is.
We'll
talk about that because I know that, you know, specifically graphic novelists, like, you know, very much deal with themselves. Maybe they'll have, you know, another group of artists or like a storyboard person that'll like just do the story and another person that'll just do the art. But like you kind of did everything. So talk about like releasing that like baby out into the world and like letting other people like take hold of it and just kind of like manipulate it into something different and something that you didn't expect.
Oh, that's a good
challenge. How'd that make
you feel? Well, Will is a control freak. She's scared of the dark, so she makes lamps. So, of course, there's a power outage because I wanted nature to be my antagonist, sort of chaos. Mm-hmm. But how do we deal, you know, because we all love control. But what do you do when you don't have control? So she actually starts sculpting shadow instead of light to sort of embrace the things that you can't control. So if anything, her character in doing this musical helped me learn how to be less controlling of like, oh, this is how it's supposed to be. Because when you get out of the way of what you think it's supposed to be and let the story be what it wants to be, that's the art part. Because it should surprise you. It should take you someplace new. So actually in the musical, I changed part of the ending because at the end of the book, Will has this emotional moment that she does by herself because she's being stubborn, like, I'm doing it on my own. But in the musical, I thought, no, the point of this is to not do everything on your own. So in the musical, I could change it. So she actually has that emotional moment with her aunt, which is like, oh, it's like the book taught me the lesson. Because when you write a story, you're often telling yourself something you're not real. It doesn't really click consciously. Your subconscious is trying to teach you.
Oh, yeah.
And you're not ready. So it is sort of a wish. So you make it to try. It's like you're trying to teach yourself something.
Cool. So we'll get Melissa into the mix because she's sitting over there all quiet.
So now the musical gets to be performed.
Yes. And we've been, I found out about this through our friend Brie Luck at Live Arts. She connected us a couple of years ago. And it just, I don't know how to explain it. The second I heard the music, I just got chills, and I knew that we had to do this. It's not like a traditional musical. The style of the music and certainly does fit into a lot of the productions we do, which feature young people. So this is primarily a teen cast, which is really fun. We have local professional artist Tiffany Smith, who runs the Virginia shop.
Oh,
she's
yeah.
playing on Ella. So we're lucky to have her involved. But everybody else is under 18. And anyway, when we connected, I just felt like I also shouldn't be too controlling. I just thought the timing of this will come when it's supposed to. And so it's taken a couple of years to get this off the ground, but I think it's the perfect timing, and we have a wonderful cast.
Yeah.
And it's been such a great experience, obviously, for the kids to be able to work with Laura Lee and to meet her and to hear from the writer about the process and the characters. You know, it's something very unusual that we don't normally get to do as performers and directors. So that's been awesome. And we open next Saturday, October the 14th.
Wow.
So, how long have you been rehearsing?
We've been rehearsing for about 5 weeks. Is that right, Mia? Yeah. And it's really been a collaborative process. And because we don't have the normal floor plan that we would for a musical, it's not really, we've never had the chance to see it before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're really creating something from scratch, which is really a gift. But also, there's so many options, you know?
Right, yeah.
And so we're not quite ready to open, so I'm happy we have this last week, which is how we all feel, right, in the last week. Like, we could have two more weeks, and that would be great.
Yeah.
But it's coming together. It's definitely coming together. It's going to be a unique story, and we're really proud to be able to offer tickets at pay what you can for the entire show. So
that's awesome.
You know, if you have to come for free, that's fine. If you want to make a donation, that's fine. But we really wanted this to be accessible.
And don't be coming with that change bag, y'all. Really, we want the money that folds.
Wait a minute,
no,
David.
Not the money that jingles. Because I know some broke old artists out there.
I have seen you come up in some places with the change bag. Don't be knocking on people about the change bag.
That was different. That was in my unenlightened days.
That was different?
That was.
We are all here to witness the moment where David has grown.
And that was for some musicians that, well, whatever.
You know, they say be
Charlottesville is a lovely place full of burgeoning arts as far as the eye can see. Nah, but for real, support theater.
We're happy to take change, really.
Right? We got laundry to do. So.
Let's hear Mia sing. Can we do that?
Well, let's not put her on the spot or anything.
She came here to sing. She knew.
She didn't know that she was singing until like 15 minutes ago, and y'all just like sprung that up on her, so she's been in the parking lot.
You know what?
She's a pro.
I heard her warming up outside.
Sipping
she's
some honey
good.
Lemon tea. You know,
she's good.
Made her all nervous and stuff. Mia Buckley's going to do a song from Will and the Wit, and it's going to be beautiful and amazing. So
and
I'm just going to shut up
now. This is the opening number of the show. It kind of sets up her love of working on lights, and it sets up her relationship with the shadows in her life.
Tease a song.
You ready?
Mm-hmm. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little lamp of mine, I've gotta get it wired. Ever since I was a little girl, I saw monsters in the dark. So my grandpa taught me how to lighten my fears with a spark. I repurpose eerie merch, antlers, coat racks, teacups, and dolls. Since I moved in with my aunt at our family's antique store, now my wild imagination is stuck in overdrive. I work constantly to illuminate, still can't shake this feeling that these shadows are alive. These shadows are it out with electricity. Connect the wire, flip the switch, chase away the darkness haunting me. Living without mom and dad, this is not what we had planned. 17, why am I spooked so easily? Just need to build another shine. This little lamp of mine, I've got to get it wired.
Yeah.
Woo! Yes. Yes.
All right.
All right, we're going to do a drop. We're going to pay some bills. We're going to be right back with the cast and creators of Women Wit. This is Homegrown. Drop! It is 20 minutes past the hour, and if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Homegrown, 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. You need to get the podcast and run that joint back, because Mia Buckley just killed it with the title, well, not the title track, but the beginning track from the new musical, Walt. Will and Wit. Will and Wit. I keep wanting to say Walt and Wit.
Walt and weird Wit. Name.
No. Screw you, Disney. Will and Wit. Coming out to Belmont's Arts Collective, October 14th through October 22nd. Mia, that was amazing. That was so amazing. And you're actually coming up with your own EP coming soon.
Yes,
is that right?
I am. Yeah, it's coming out early next year.
Okay.
I'm hoping January 1st, because that's my birthday.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's just a cool day.
Nice.
So, yeah, I'm hoping January 1st.
Right on. Let's talk about the music. Did you find, like, because I'm sensing a lot of, like, 90s, you know, early 90s PJ Harvey, a little bit of Tori Amos in there. How'd you feel about the music, and did you find any difficulty in it in implementing it with the acting and
It's definitely different from traditional musical theater.
Absolutely.
Music. And
that's what I like about it.
yeah, every song is really different from every other song. So it wasn't necessarily a struggle, but it was just something to get used to that my character had to sing all these different styles. And not just one continuation mm-hmm. of the same style. But yeah, it was.
And that's something we've talked about a lot lately, which is, you know, often in musicals, a character will have like a certain theme that they sing over and over and over. And in this show, Will has to sing in different vocal ranges, and she has to sing wildly different styles. And so has been a lot of conversation about how do you keep that character and bringing that to the song.
But that's also more indicative of real life, though. I mean, every person has multiple facets to their personality.
Absolutely.
I mean,
yeah.
Not everyone listens to just pop. Like, people mm-hmm. listen to pop and rock and
right.
death metal and classical. And, you know, so that's really cool. I like that you have made her, like, a full person.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. I mean, it's important to embrace, like, complexity in everybody and to not feel tied down by, you know, a certain, quote-unquote, personality. Because, like Leslie said, people are feeling different at any, you know, stretch of the day. I mean, you could feel one way and then have something happen and that completely change your perspective. And maybe, you know, in a character sense, but also in a personal sense. And just, like, in terms of, like, emotion and how you're feeling. So, Laura Lee, when you were getting the music from your partner at the time, talk about that. How did you kind of bring up that idea, or did she just kind of run with that and was like,
I didn't give her any guidance. I just said, you know, do what feels authentic to you. Because I think what's awesome about, you know, the format of graphic novels and things like musicals is that there's an expansion of the definition of what they have to be. Because there's more a variety of creators coming in and changing, like, does a book, this graphic novel have to be like this? Or does a musical have to be just like this? I think there's mm-hmm. an expansion of the limitations, and because maybe it's mm-hmm. more like outsiders, because, like, I'm kind of an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
And Cece, the first song she sent me was Blue Crush. And, oh my gosh, it just, yeah, I think that's, like, the, not everyone's favorite, but mm-hmm. it's the one that really, yeah, it gives me, like, chills, because it has, I don't know, the Broadway thing where you have characters singing two different songs and somehow they overlap mm-hmm. into one song. I don't understand mm-hmm. how you can even do that.
That's what I'm
saying. And one song is like a Latin number, which is totally different. And we brought in our friend Cello Joe to do some cello tracks.
Oh, Cello Joe.
Oh, yeah, everyone knows Cello Joe.
Like
right.
You do.
Like you do.
Like,
right.
Yeah, he's friends with Saxophone Sam, I think.
Yeah.
And Triangle Tim, all of them. In a group.
Actually, that'd be a great band, right?
We have like a 20s number in the show that's kind of like a fun little throwback. And then there's one song that the amazing 12-year-old Christina Cooper sings called Winging It. She's like a little Beyonce. It's amazing. And yeah, we have such a variety of styles that I think it'll keep people really also engaged and interested.
And one song is called Hashtag, and it's all computer speak. Which, of course, was some of it was already irrelevant by the time that we got to the show. Like, oh, people don't Vine anymore. But artnership is a theme in the book and the musical, and it's about celebrating collaboration. And I think that's including a variety of voices, a variety of styles, and that, yeah, maybe you don't have to just do one thing over and over and over and over anymore.
And that whole idea has really come to fruition on this show, because this has been a lot less about me like authoritatively telling people what to do and really collaborating. It's taking place at the Belmont Arts Collaborative, and then having the original collaborators involved has just been an incredible and really unique experience. Mm-hmm. We also were accepted into the Fringe Festival at the Virginia Theater Association Conference. So on October the 28th in Norfolk, we're going to be performing a different version of this. It's going to be 60 minutes as opposed to about 90 minutes.
Right.
And Laura Lee's working on that that adaptation right now, and we'll see how that works. But we're so excited to present it for lots of other high school students and other people who might want to produce this in their schools or in their community theaters. Mm-hmm. Because we think it's a piece that is really relatable to a lot of people. And interesting, you know, that the theme of hurricane is so prevalent in our show, and we've really seen that happening all over. So I think people will enjoy that part of it, actually.
That's my favorite part of the show, because the audience will be the hurricane. So that's an immersive sort of body of sound thing with, you know, where you make the rain and the wind and everyone's yelling, because really I just love to make people yell. Like. I think I want to use to just yell and have a safe space to just let it out. So that's a very fun part of the show.
We're in a good city if you want to yell.
Let's
yell together. So basically you just got David as an audience member. Probably every single night.
I'll yell at shows that they don't want me to yell.
Oh, my God! So if I were an individual and somebody told me what I was going to do one night, and I said, I'm going to go see this musical that was developed from a graphic novelist, I don't think a lot of people would imagine a woman being in that role. So talk about...
What's up, bitches?
That's how we greet people in 94.7. What's up?
Hopefully nobody actually heard that on the radio. Wow.
That could have come in at one more an opportune time.
Hello, ladies.
Wow.
So talk about being in a world dominated by men when you decided to, like, you know, incorporate your thoughts into a graphic novel. Because I remember you saying something that you wanted to grow up and be, you know, an animator for Disney. And this kind of, like, took you in a different direction. Talk about that more, because I was really interested in that story.
Yeah, well, like, you know, most girls who like to draw, you know, in the early 90s, I wanted to be a Disney animator because, like, I'm a little mermaid. And I learned how hard it was and immediately gave up. And
wait, I gotta say it. Does that mean that you wanted to be, wait for it, part of that world?
No! How come I've never thought of that joke? You're good. I went into education first, because like a lot of creatives, you do the wrong job first. I put the cart ahead of the horse.
Communications.
I wanted to teach before I had anything to teach yet. So I decided to go make myself an artist and figure out what I was good for, and I moved to New York because that's what you do, and that's where I discovered graphic novels. And actually, it was, as a woman, I didn't have problems getting in because I wasn't trying to do cape stuff. I was doing,
if I wanted
to draw Spider-Man, it'd be different,
but
I wanted to do like young adult stories for basically the students I used to teach,
right,
and give them characters that I didn't see.
Yeah.
And I feel like as women, we can sort of bend the rules, because I don't take the format as seriously because I see it as very malleable. It's like tofu. Comics just soak up whatever flavor you want to put them in.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm following the footsteps of Alison Bechdel, because she did a graphic novel musical Fun Home, which is, I think, coming to Live Arts.
Yeah.
So she's, because that was the first graphic novel I read was by her.
Okay.
So she's like my inspiration role model. yeah. So it's a fun world to be in. Yeah, thankfully, I've not had problems with people saying, you can't do that. Because if anything, they're like, yes, make more comics for these girls, because girls like comics. Go figure.
Yeah.
So there's definitely an audience out there, and they're all smart.
Yeah.
People call them geek girls, but I think they're smart women, really.
Well, I think people like stories, and, you know, in general, and it's incredibly important to have women in those roles, you know, writing stories that are highly relatable to women and letting them see that, you know, it's not just, you know, big guns and big boobs, and we're not just fighting against the forces of evil. There are real stories that need to be told in whatever way, shape, or form, and you encapsulate that really well.
Stop challenging my masculine prerogative.
No, I think I will continue to challenge that.
It's his prerogative.
Yeah.
He can do what he wanted to.
I got one, too. I got one, too.
We all got one. Oh, man. Will and Wit, a new musical based on graphic novel, Laura Lee College. Music by C.C. Vaughn. It's coming to the Belmont Arts Collective. A great place if you want to see music on stage, October 14th through October 22nd. Melissa, Mia, Harley, thank you so much for coming out.
And it was really awesome to hear about
this. Back.
I will say that we have a very small, intimate venue at the Belmont Arts Collaborative, so please get your tickets early.
It's this small.
At dmradventures.com. That's where you can find out about tickets.
Awesome.
Pay what you can.
DMR Adventures, but pay a lot, because, I mean, y'all heard Mia. I mean, you need to get this girl
to
college. But she's going to be making money on the MEPs anyway, so, I mean, just throwing that cash.
She about to blow up!
Thank you so much
for coming out. Thank you.
All right, let's do some art. Art announcements. Here are just some of the artistic events happening this week. Now through November 26th, the American Shakespeare Center's summer/fall season, featuring Much Ado About Nothing, Love's Labor's Lost, Henry VI Part 3, by Shakespeare in the modern musical Peter and the Starcatcher, all at the Blackfriars Playhouse in Stanton. And now through January 16th, as the Kluge Rue Aboriginal Art Collection presents an off-site exhibition, Defending the Ocean. 21 works by contemporary indigenous artists celebrating the central importance of the ocean to human life at the Charles L. Brown Science and Engineering Library at UVA's Clark Hall. Now through November 28th is the Complete Works of Shakespeare Abridged at Guerrilla Theater Projects. October 10th, What Can Our Poets Do to Cross the Lines of Race, Gender, Class, or Sexual Identity? What obstacles imposed by others or ourselves get in the way? Two poets, Rita Dove and Mark Doty, will discuss these questions with each other and with the audience at the Paramount Theater. October 11th, Laugh Your Ass Off, open mic with Chris Allen at the Southern Cafe and Music Hall. October 12th, UVA's MFA's reading series continues this week with Sasha Stein, Prevost, and Anna Beecher at New Dominion Bookshop. And also on the 12th is former guest from 2 weeks ago, Sharon Harrigan, reads from her new memoir, Playing with Dynamite, Kaboom, at New Dominion Bookshop as well. October 13th, St. Nicholas at Guerrilla Theater Productions. That's Friday the 13th. October 14th, UVA's Fraylin Art Museum docent and former guest June Heinz guides you through 45 minutes of meditative exploration of Fraylin art pieces at her Looking Inward Meditative Art Tour.
I feel the center! I feel the center!
Also on October 15th, Lisa Bean's exhibition Karma opens at the Jefferson School African American Heritage Center with an artist talk. Also on the 14th, Jane Friedman leads the seminar of Art of Recklessness, Surprise Others, Subversion, where she will discuss ways in which you can both create and subvert readers' expectations through form, write, scheme, form, write, rhyme, schemes, and other methods. Dude, God, what is wrong with me? And for your music options this week.
Oh, for our music options today, Jason Burke Trio at Blue Mountain Brewery at 2:30. Hey, Jason. What's up? Today, Beliza at Glasshouse Winery at 3:30. Tonight, Randy Johnston and Jonah Kane West at the Bebedero. King Golden Banshee. King Golden Banshee at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub, Bob Huntington, and then Travis Elliott at Fellini's on October 10th, October 11th, Matthew Wilner and Enemies at Rapture, October 12th, King Golden Banshee at the Market, and Grillin? Is that right?
I think it's
Grillin. Grellin?
Grellin.
Okay. Nick and Steve Pollock at Dirty Nellies. October 13th, the Renee Ruth Duo at Wild Wolf Brewery. Duo Boheme at Wegmans Market. Tara Mills and Jimmy Stelling give you bluegrass, Americana, and modern day folk at Blue Mountain Barrel House. Mojo Pie at Dirty Nellies, October 14th. Doo-wop sing-along at Emancipation Park, led by Joan Fenton and Ben Adams at 2:30. The Pollocks at Batesville Market, Ragged Mountain String Band at Albemarle Cider Works, Outlaw Bubba McCauley at James River Brewery, Alligator at Ix Art Park. Alligator? Really? There's a band named... Okay. Anyway, the area's best songwriters compete for cash prizes at the 15th annual songwriting contest at Rapunzel's Coffee and Books.
In fact, we've had a significant number of the members of Alligator on the show.
Okay, well, I don't know the members, so how would I know that? Brennan Glenmore and Andy Thacker playing at the Front Porch Roots Music School every Friday morning, the West African Drum Circle at the Front Porch Roots Music School. Every Monday, Bluegrass Jam at the Front Porch Roots Music School. Every Monday, Seafoot, the weekly open jam at Thomas Jefferson Memorial Unitarian Church. Every Tuesday, traditional session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Every Tuesday, Latin Guitar Night with Miles Pierce and Humberto Sales at the Bebedero. Every Wednesday, here's the list for Wednesday. Open mic night at Perenata Farm Brewery.
Bam!
Open mic night at Holly's Deli and Pub, hosted by Josh Mayo.
Bam!
Jazz Collective Number 9 at Fellini's Number 9.
Bam!
Bunchata Fusion at the Anteroom, presented by the Charlottesville Salsa Club.
Bam!
DJ and Friends at the Bebedero.
Bam!
And the Mike Rosinski and Jeff Duggar Quartet at Miller's.
Woo!
Every Thursday, Lua at the Bebedero. And every Thursday, John Durth at Miller's. All right. Woo! Lord, that's a long list.
That is a long, happy list.
Happy
of the music
list, though.
And acting and woo! Art stuff in Seaville. Get your art on. Get it popping. We going to pay some bills?
We can pay a little bill.
Let's pay.
Just one.
Let's pay. A bill.
Oh, we're going to do a drop.
Yeah, just homegrown. Yeah, you know.
That one.
This is homegrown. Drop!
Oh, my God.
This is Eli Cook, and you're listening to Homegrown on 94.7.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Homegrown, 37 minutes past the hour. We are on 94.7 WPPC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Stay tuned after the show for the Sunday morning wake-up call with your host, Rick Moore. Their guests are Al Byrne and Mary Lynn Mathry,
yes.
Talking about medical cannabis. So I guess her name should be Mary Jane.
Mathry. It should be. Maybe that is her middle name and she just didn't put it down because, you know.
That's a good show. I'm off the cannabis train, but I definitely want to listen on that. Yeah, I just want to like focus more on life, and
really,
not be sleepy every 5 minutes.
Oh,
I mean, I'm just saying.
No,
I'm
I understand. Saying. I understand.
Lost years.
No, I got it. I got it. I'm, you know, I was in college.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
You know. Gotta do what you gotta do.
We all gotta. Hey, you know, that's amazing. What college is supposed that's, to be you know, about, right?
Open your mind, expand,
experimentation,
horizon.
And all that. Okay, so our next guest, and I say guests, yes. Plural.
I was gonna do that. You just.
Yeah, well, I did it already. It. So, yes, our next guests are coming to us from Four County Players. They are in a lovely show written by the great Arthur Miller, The Crucible, all yes. Right? Running from October 13th through the 29th, we have, so Frank Saxon, you are playing?
Governor Danforth.
And John Kemgard, you are playing?
John Proctor.
And Teresa, oh wow, that's a last name.
Yeah. That, can try?
Sure, I'll try, but please don't be upset if I get it wrong. Texera?
Oh, close. Teixeira.
Teixeira. Yeah. Okay. All right. Cool. Yes.
I was right
awesome.
Over here, and I just said it.
See, but David, I'm not paying attention to you right now.
I was trying to give you the Jeopardy.
But I'm not.
Like,
I'm not paying attention to you right now. And you are playing.
I'm Elizabeth.
She never pays attention.
Oh, husband and wife in the house. Okay. Awesome. Okay, so for those people who have been living under a rock for the past, oh, I don't know, 50 years, what is The Crucible about?
It's a happy-go-lucky, wacky comedy.
It's a musical.
It's a musical. No, it's and I've been corrected on this.
You have
protected, have you not?
Yeah.
I've been corrected. It's not an allegory. It's a parable.
Yes.
Based upon, Arthur Miller wrote it based upon the House Un-American Activities trials of the 50s, the right. McCarthy witch hunts, and naturally used the actual Salem witch hunts as his backdrop for that. So that's what the show is about. It's about the government stepping in and hunting down and arresting people and killing people.
Hmm. No, that's not timely at all.
If only that had some sort of relation to anything that's going on in the country nowadays.
To right now,
if
I don't. Yeah, I'm failing to see that, but you know, well, you know, whatever. Okay,
it's a fable.
It's a fable. So, so this hasn't been done in Charlottesville in a while, if ever, right? I mean, so so what has it been like reviving this story?
It's been pretty intense, actually. So.
So have there been conversations about how you guys are going to relate the show to present day, or are you just...
Not as many. We've had a dramaturg come in and teach us all about the Puritans themselves so that we can kind of play it as if it was written just about that and not about anything else, so that the audience can get their own meaning. Because mm-hmm. I think every group is going to see their own group in it.
So, okay, John Proctor. So talk to us about creating this character, because you know you're kind of central to the plot and how the story unfolds.
It's been an interesting journey, and as Teresa was saying, we've had a lot of great assistants coming in and teaching us about kind of what was going on at the time, and playing the role of John Proctor has really been a humbling experience, because he is a man who really wants nothing to do with what's going on with everything at the time, and has unknowingly and unwittingly kind of become this hero in this situation, and he gets drawn in where he doesn't want to, because he doesn't see himself as the hero type, but ultimately winds up doing, you know, he has to make a stand, he has to do what he believes is right in his own moral character. And I think that you know, we see a lot of that in today's society, where you know there's a lot of polarization happening, a lot of things that are going on that we might be reluctant to step up and to take action against, but we ultimately know that, you know, when we see something that's going on that's wrong, that stands against us, that we have to do something about it.
So Miller is great, or at least Miller is a favorite of mine. But one of the difficulties that I think the people experience, certainly that I've experienced with Miller, is his language. It's really unique to him, mm-hmm. and beguilingly so, because at first it seems really straightforward, but it's not. Mm-hmm. Frequently, if you don't get it, if you don't hear it, it can sound really stilted, and I think this play more than others, because he also is trying to give it sort of this Puritanesque voice, it can mm-hmm. sound even more stilted than other plays of his. Have you guys, I mean, how has your experience been dealing with the language in this play?
Well, yeah, Frank, yes. And I were just discussing that outside. One of the things that's been really difficult about the memorization of this play is the organization of the lines and the structuring, as you're reading it, you might dismiss it and have this tendency to want to paraphrase, but you know, Miller really took time and effort to organize things the way that he did for a reason, and as you start to look at the lines and pick things apart, you start to see what he was trying to say in that. And there's a lot of subtle things that are brought out, and that, you know, we have a responsibility as actors to try and make, you know, people hear that and hear that voice that he was trying to write down.
So is that something that your director was adamant about as well?
Yes.
About being word perfect?
Yes. Yes, we have to do. There's a lot of things that would be easy to paraphrase, especially with this, because he wrote it in such a way. So there's a lot of lines like, you know, she have danced, and but, you know, just where you wouldn't say it. It sounds odd to say it, but within the context of what they're doing, it. When you read through it, it's like, okay, this is the way these people talk. This is the way, or a close approximation of it. So it is, and because it's Arthur Miller, you really want to make sure that you're getting it exactly the way he wrote it and not substitute words, because he chose his words very, very carefully, and they flow, and they have a rhythm to them that needs to be appreciated and heard and spoken properly. So yeah, it is. It's a big undertaking, and a couple of the scenes, the trial scene especially, is really, really long.
I mean, coming just, from the person that has the most lines.
It is, but it's a really, really long, and it switches focus a lot. So my biggest challenge has been not so much getting the lines, although there are certainly a lot of lines. The lines are a challenge, but remembering the order of the events, because my character especially drives a lot of that action and has to turn from like, okay, now I talk to this person, and now I talk to this person over here, and now I'm grilling her, and now I'm talking to him and questioning him, and then I talk over to this person, and then I'm calling this person in, and it's just, there's this ebb and flow, and my character is kind of directing the whole thing, and it's very, very, and it's a long scene, and it's just really, really, keeping that in mind is actually more challenging than getting the words right.
Yeah, it's
who
really,
am I yelling at now?
It's really easy when you're in a group of friends to get in an argument, and you're just automatically cutting off people. But when you're trying to choreograph getting
when
cut
it's
off,
scripted,
it's,
yes.
Yeah, when it's scripted, it's hard to make that flow naturally. But
damned ellipses.
I have to say that our director Rick Gray has really done a fantastic job. He's very passionate about the play, very passionate about Miller and the authenticity, and really wanting to bring this to life in the most powerful way possible.
Yeah.
So Teresa, what was the biggest thing that struck you between how women in society are treated today and how women during Puritan times were treated?
Well, how women in Puritan times were treated is not exactly how it's shown in the play. The play kind of reads it through a 1950s lens. Mm-hmm. I had this discussion with our dramaturg once that the women in the Puritan society had a very important role, and if you were a single man, you kind of couldn't run your own household. There was just too much to do, and you had to have a woman to be your partner. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the play, I get to talk a lot when it's just my husband and I, but as soon as another guy comes into the room, I stop talking, and
yeah.
I'm not part of the conversation anymore, which is not necessarily a Puritan thing and more of a 1950s thing.
I was just thinking, because you guys are talking about your dramaturg talking about Puritan times, it seems that this play speaks much more to 1940s, 1950s America. I mean, you know, Arthur Miller and his friends and colleagues are all being called before the House Un-American Activities Committee.
Right, they're all
being, you know, I mean, people are being blacklisted. Mm-hmm. People are being challenged with being communist. People are losing their jobs, mm-hmm. their homes. Friendships are getting broken. Arthur Miller's friendship with Ilya Kazan was damaged for decades because of Kazan deciding to name communists when other people were named people that he thought were communists that other people wouldn't. I mean, that, it seems like it's much more about that than it is about any accurate display of the Salem witch trials. So did your dramaturg talk about that at all?
We did discuss that. I think that the dramaturg really wanted to focus, though, on those kind of differences, and went to explaining how Puritan life was different than what is portrayed in the play, but wanted us to understand what the Puritan lifestyle was like and what their society was like, so that we could, in that regard, note the differences.
So don't represent it.
But,
yeah.
So don't you think that since Miller wrote this piece, not as necessarily a tool for teaching about Puritan life and work ethic, he taught it more as a parable about the time that he was living in. Don't you feel that you guys have a responsibility and an obligation to speak about the times that we're in order to have that transferred out? Politics being representative of power, the timeless tale of fear and racism and loyalty and betrayal.
The misuse of power.
Exactly. Yeah. A bunch of people getting blamed for something trying to blame it on somebody else who is more marginalized.
We absolutely have that responsibility. But I also think that the play itself, regardless of what time period it's set in, regardless of how the characters are, the power of the play itself is that it speaks to that and as you said, a timeless manner. So that it really does. I think people will come away from it being able to, without us beating them over the head with it, with being able to say, yes, this is
being
this
able
is
going, to associate it with
this
times,
is going
yeah,
on right. now. This was going on in the 50s. It was going on in the 1690s. Yeah. It's going on today. It's still going on. This is the same kind of thing. And it's not necessarily about girls calling other girls witches or telling people that they're witchcraft, or people being called out as communists. But it's still happening now. And the fear, the government propagating that fear and giving into that fear and using that fear for their own ends is something that still goes on. And I think people will get that from the power of the play itself.
It's all fake news anyway.
That's right. It's all fake news.
We're going to do a drop. We're going to be right back with part of the cast of The Crucible. This is Homegrown. Drop!
Well,
52 minutes past the hour, and if you're just tuning in, what the hell is wrong with you? You just missed an awesome Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We're talking with a part of the cast of The Crucible, coming out of Four County Players, October 13th, Friday the 13th.
Woo! You're playing all the parts.
Through October 29th. It's a three-person show.
We're just doing the whole show.
It's going to be amazing.
Three-person Crucible.
Right.
Yes, Teresa's playing all the women.
She is.
Yes.
My husband's cheating on me with myself.
Yep. Yep. How about that?
Awesome, awesome. So, so many iterations of The Crucible. So many times that people have seen it. Like, if you haven't heard of The Crucible, I guess you missed, like, 6th through 9th grade of, like, any
of class. English class. Like, where were you?
In the world.
Though literally everyone I've told that I'm in this play has never heard of it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
There's really something wrong with the world.
There is something wrong.
Like, this is why we only have 2 viewers.
Really?
What's an art? What's that?
Is
that an app for your phone?
Who doesn't learn The Crucible in high school? Like,
surprisingly academic people?
No. Okay. More proof that our educational system is just like crap.
Are there going to be any weird things, any differences, any
yeah, how have you made it your own?
There are a few slapstick parts that have been added.
Waga waga.
We've played up. There are a few places in the script, not many obviously, but a few places that can be interpreted as kind of humorous and light and breaking the mood a little bit, giving people a little chance to
breathe
for a second. So we've picked up on those and tried to do that. I'm going to be speaking with a German accent the entire time, so we've turned. No, we're not doing that.
So it's just like real life, basically.
You have compacted with the devil, yeah?
Oh no.
I will have a tiki torch. I will be.
Because cabaret was so popular.
Cabaret was so popular.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, goodness gracious. Mercy me.
Too soon.
Right? So you guys are doing your first full run through today, right?
Tonight, yeah. So we start Tech Week tonight, and then we open this Friday,
okay.
The 13th.
Well, say goodbye to sleep.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right.
I hope you guys.
I mean,
have a good Tech Week.
It's a lot. We've been working really hard. We were just talking outside. We've only been rehearsing for about 5 weeks, and really for the amount of material and what a heavy piece this is, that is an extremely short period of time for what we've been trying to accomplish.
Yeah, that's a lot to compress.
There's a lot going on, but I think it's, that's really the great part about theater and the arts is when you take all these pieces that you know you've been seeing separately and independently, and you start to see everything kind of come together, and that's where you start to see something, you know, magical take place. You start to see things come alive. You start to see the characters come alive, and you start to see the fruits of your labors.
Yeah, yeah. So so what's the set look like? Do you know?
We are performing in the cellar at Four County. And if you've ever been there, it's a tiny little space. It's going to be fairly sparse.
Minimalist.
Minimalist.
We wouldn't want to detract from the actors.
No.
Right. No.
We would never do that.
A few little very well-placed benches.
Boxes.
Boxes. Yeah. There's a bed, and there's a...
A single tree limb.
And there's it's a Spartan, very Spartan set piece, but it'll be very effective.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And is there any music involved?
Just background music.
Yeah. Rick has been working on that from my understanding, so we'll find that out sometime this week, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely one of those, you see a lot of productions where there's a lot of technicality, there's a lot of production value, there's music, there's props, there's art. This is really going back to the heart of acting, where it's more about the actor and what is happening on the stage, and the way that we're putting it on, and you know, in three quarter round, you have audiences on your left, your right, in front of you, so it's much more involved, it's much more passionate, it's much more intimate performance.
The Crucible
in your
up
face.
In your face,
right.
And in your lap. At the Cellar of Four County Players, October 13th through October 29th. Happy Tech Week, y'all. Frank Saxon, John Kengard, Teresa Teixeira, thank you so much for being a part of this.
Thank you for having us.
I'm sure we'll have you back on this show. But
wow.
I guess we got to wrap this puppy up.
I guess so.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't have a rant today.
Okay.
Because, you know, there's a lot of anger going on over here.
I mean, everybody else has been ranting, so I'm just going to piggyback onto everybody else's rant.
Yeah.
Listening to Facebook. Like it's
listening
it's
to Facebook? Yeah, I know.
I've been glancing at it every now and then, trying to take a digital detox, but
right?
What can you do when your town's overrun by Nazis every couple of months? So, hey, I'll just push myself back into the program.
It's a thing. It's a thing, again. And, you know, we will get through it.
Yep.
Just like we got through all the others.
Yeah, but I'm trying to make them stop. I'm not just trying to get through it.
Well,
trying to get.
We're working on that.
Yeah.
And we will continue to work on that.
Yes, absolutely.
All right.
Leslie, I love you so much.
Yeah, I love you too, sweetie.
Clinton, I love you so much.
We want to thank our guests for coming on today.
Melissa Charles,
Sharon
Buckley, Laura Lee Gulledge,
Sharon
Sexton,
the stuff,
John Kempgard, Teresa Teixeira. Stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call. Rick Moore's in the house.
Ooh.
And we're going to be talking about medical cancer with the guests Al Byrne and Mary Lynn Mathry.
Damn.
I knew I was right the first time. Mathry. Poop. Ugh. I hate it when you're like right the first
it's
time.
It's okay.
All
it's
right.
Okay.
We got to get out of here. Love you guys. This is Homegrown.
See you next week.
Peace.
Listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.